tens of thousands of young people are in limbo at the border between U.S. and Mexico, caught trying to cross the border into the United States. Most aren't from Mexico, but are coming up from further south, from Central America, with the largest number coming from Honduras. The influx of young people has driven a response from the White House and the State Department and protests on the border in California. But why are they taking this dangerous trek north with an uncertain reception here in the U.S.? Dana Frank has studied and written about Honduras for years. She's a professor of history at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Dana, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks a lot, and thanks for having me.
So before we get into the history, what are things like in Honduras? What are the conditions that are driving thousands of young Hondurans to flee north?
Well, most of the media has been talking about this as they're fleeing gangs and violence. And they are, in fact, fleeing really dangerous gangs and spectacular violence, including violence against children. But what's been missing from the media coverage is that the Honduran government itself is largely responsible much of that violence and the proliferation of gangs. People may remember the coup 5 years ago on June 28th. They're at the fifth anniversary now. And that military coup, of which the current president was a prominent supporter, unleashed the doors of violence and criminality in Honduras. And it's been widely documented that since the murder rate is now the highest in the world, the prosecutors and judges are corrupt, and most definitely the police. The government itself has said that 70% of the Honduran police are beyond saving. That means they're involved in extortion, in bribery with gangs, and above all with drug trafficking. And that's where a lot of this criminality is coming from, that's leading to spectacular violence, because you can kill anybody you want pretty much and get away with that, and that's including killing of children. And there's no political will at the top of the Honduran government to clean it up. In fact, the answer of the Honduran government has been militarization, and including the creation of very dangerous military police that has already committed very serious human rights abuses. And, you know, just to get an example of how out of control things are, the most prominent advocate for children in Honduras is a man named Jose Guadalupe Ruelas, and he's the director of a faith-based organization, a Christian organization called Casa Alianza, and they advocate for homeless children. And about a month and a half ago, he very prominently criticized the government and said it was partly responsible for the recent massacres of children and the dangerous situation for children. And a couple days later, he was beaten up by the new military police, and a smear campaign was launched at him in the papers that are pro-government newspapers. So we're talking about a very terrifying situation.
And as you say, you see the coup in Honduras back in 2009 as a turning point. Remind us, give us a nutshell, what happened 5 years ago?
Well, the democratically elected president of Honduras, Manuel Zelaya, was placed on a plane, very famously, by the military and was sent off to Costa Rica. And with the full support of the Honduran Supreme Court, which had been handpicked a few months before to support it, and most of the Honduran Congress. So it was a really overwhelming reaction by the Honduran oligarchs who control the country against somebody who was sort of pinned as a leftist, but actually was sort of slightly leaning leftward and stopping some of the power grabs that have happened ever since. And then after that, the U.S. treated Micheletti, the post-coup dictator, as an equal to Zelaya, and then recognized the outcome of a completely illegitimate election that fall of Porfirio Lobo, and that election had been boycotted by almost all the opposition and almost all international observers.
The accusations from the people behind the coup and from some in the international community were that the previous president had, in effect, been trying to organize a constitutional coup to change the constitution, extend his term limits. What did you make of that at the time?
Oh, that was really invented out of whole cloth. He did, in fact, had the day of the coup was a public opinion poll. The president has a right in the Honduran law to have a public opinion poll, and it was taking place the day of the coup. But that was really only whether people wanted to elect delegates to constitutional convention, which would have happened a year or two later when he was well out of office. He never mentioned having a second term. That was made up by the Honduran right out of whole cloth. And in fact, the current president, Juan Orlando Hernandez, who was a big supporter of the coup at the time, has been exploring whether he could have a second term. So, which shows you, and the Micheletti, the dictator, had promoted it in the 1980s. So really, it was about pushback against some very mild things that Zelaya had been doing, including blocking privatizations that are now going forward.
You mentioned government of Honduras being responsible for the breakdown of law and order. How, and you've touched on this briefly, what have they done as far as human rights are concerned?
Well, there's been tremendous repression by the military and the police with almost complete impunity. At least 300 people are alleged to have been killed by state security forces just in the first 2 years after the coup, I think. The exact dates are complicated, but, you know, and these are almost all in complete impunity, as Human Rights Watch has pointed out, as Amnesty International has pointed out, you know, even the United States government, which has largely supported the post-coup government, very enthusiastically admits that there's widespread corruption in the criminal justice system.
And talk some more about the American response from the coup to this day. Has there been criticism of the government that came into power?
Very little. In fact, there's been a tremendous amount of enthusiastic support for it. Up to even a month ago, the ambassador to the U.S., in response to some congressional criticism we can talk about, praised Juan Orlando Hernandez's human rights, commitment to human rights, you know, right after the military police beat up and tear gassed 36 members of the opposition party inside the main hall of Congress on May 13th. The U.S. has very overtly supported the successive post-coup regimes. And in the name of fighting the drug war, in fact, U.S. military and police funding for Honduras has gone, was suspended partially and briefly after the coup and has gone up every year since, along with U.S. direct military funding for its own work in Honduras. So we're talking about a very terrifying support, an overt support for a very scary regime that's waging a war against its own people and viciously attacks human rights defenders from Honduras when they have spoken in Congress, and that's led to death threats.
What would you like to see from the U.S. if you could get a reversal of current policy?
Well, first of all, we can't talk about the border children issue as something that's just happening at the border. Obviously, we need to protect the children and unite them with their families. But we can't keep pouring money into these corrupt police and military, including in the name of helping them. You know, maybe somewhere around $300 million has been poured into from various sources, including the European Union, has poured into supposedly reforming and helping train the Honduran police since the coup with almost no effect. In fact, they've been documented by the Associated Press for killing people in so-called social cleansing killings in the last year. So I think we have to immediately cut all police and military aid. We have to stop acting like they're a friendly partner. We have to stop acting like Juan Orlando Hernandez, the president, is committed to human rights and has the political will. He has been widely alleged to himself be connected to drug trafficking and clearly does not have the political will. In fact, he has this political will to actually militarize the situation, and a further militarization of any of these borders is not the answer. And I do want to underscore that 108 members of Congress at the end of May signed a letter questioning U.S. support for this regime and raising concerns about human rights. You know, at the broad level, we have to take on the drug war. I mean, the drug war is the framework in which we're pouring money into this vicious regime in Honduras. And we have to talk about prevention and addiction programs at the U.S. and stop militarizing the drug war, because that's what's pouring in the kind of support for these state security forces that are committing vast violence in Honduras and which the kids are fleeing.
So ultimately, you think we are, at least in part, we, the United States, in part responsible for the arrival of over 13,000 Honduran
youth?
Absolutely.
And of course, this is a long story. In Mexico, why do people leave these countries? Because of the U.S., in part because of U.S. intervention in their economies, including, you know, you can see this, certainly there's documented that the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, has caused increased migration from, or ongoing migration from Mexico, because all sorts of economic approaches are no longer viable, like growing pigs or small corn plots. And the same thing's going on in Honduras. It's the Central American Free Trade Agreement forces small producers in agriculture and manufacturing in Honduras to compete with the U.S. market. And U.S. supports policies like the International Monetary Fund, which is supporting the destruction of public sector jobs in Honduras. In fact, just a couple weeks ago, there was a meeting of the statement from the executive board of the International Monetary Fund about Honduras saying one of the things they're going to help them do is lower the government's wage bill. Well, that means cutting wages and laying off government workers, which is exactly what's happening as we speak.
It sounds like you're not optimistic about at least the near-term
future.
Well,
you know, I'm optimistic about the fact that the congressional voice is getting stronger and stronger. I mean, a year ago, 21 senators signed a letter challenging Kerry on support for the police and military in Honduras who's committing human rights abuses, and 108 members of Congress is a lot. There were some signs of hope at the confirmation hearing for the new ambassador. about 3 weeks ago, and Senator Kaine, a very important senator, new senator from Virginia, he said out loud that it was worse in Honduras than in the 1980s when he was living down there. So I actually have great hope for things, the way things are going on Congress. There's some Republican interest in this issue. There has been for a while, as well as Democrats. The problem is the State Department going to pay attention, and the White House? I mean, the White House's response, and when Biden was going down there, is to give $18.5 million more money to Honduras right as Congress has been challenging this. So the answer isn't to pour even more money into this corrupt regime, but to really shrink the whole policy in the region, and not just Honduras, but support for Perez Molina, who is, you know, documented to have been part of a genocidal regime in the 1980s. And, you know, and also talk about alternatives. I mean, why are kids not fleeing Nicaragua? No one's talking about that. It's not, they're equally a candidate for being on the route for drug traffickers, but they don't have a problem with cartels for the most part. They don't have a gang problem for the most part, and they have community-based policing. And so also to talk about, you know, why, where are the countries that aren't sending kids, along with Costa Rica? And also, let's look at El Salvador, where the murder rate has, in fact, dropped it since 2010 when the left government came in, and the current government has a really serious commitment to fighting the gang problem and to fighting poverty, and we want to respect that. So we can't glom all these countries together. That's another thing to pay attention to.
Dana, thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, and thanks so much for caring about the issue.
That's Dana Franks. She's a professor of history at the University of California, Santa Cruz.